Oh, stop it.
This is Tall Can Audio.
Oh, good listener. I'm in a mood. Just before firing up the recording here, watching a little afternoon Blue Jays baseball. Chris Bassitt just battling. Just firing, fighting through. Only to watch the bullpen come in. A ridiculous throw by Alejandro Kirk. 5 runs against in 1 inning to burn it all down. A total debacle by a couple of hapless losers. Some pathetic douchebags. I'm ready to come in here and talk some shit. Welcome to our debacle with a couple hapless losers. Matt Robinson, Lever Sage, what's happening, man? I'm throwing you in into the fire here with me. I'm sorry about that, but
listen, I've never been called hapless. Okay, I've been called a loser a lot of times, Matthew. Okay, a lot of times, and I'm looking forward to the fact that we'll see here. And I know that you're all angry.
I am.
The Jays are up 3-0, and now they gave
up
1-0,
which is half the problem. 1 run again at the time.
Yeah, but they gave up 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, how about bases loaded, nobody out, top of 9, down 2.
Okay. So they're clawing back. Well, this may, good listener, this may not be the last time you've heard me fired up about something and have to eat some crow later. We'll see how things play out.
Well, no, like we all know that the Jays will get a run and get runners at second and third with nobody out.
Find a way to hit into a triple play.
Exactly. Like, how do we find? Oh, we'll hit a sac fly and then we'll throw the guy out at the plate to end the game or something. Like, we know that this is happening, right? But
it's
true. Bases loaded, nobody out, and you're not Colorado today. Who have scored 8 runs, which is very impressive.
Yeah.
They trail by 9.
Oh my God.
I'm like, that's never good when you score 8 and you're down 9.
So there are more hapless losers out there. People even more hapless.
Imagine scoring 8 runs and being down 9 as you go to the 9th inning. Yes, Minnesota leading Colorado 17-8, but it's good. You know what? I'm sitting here in my lovely home, but just another day for me. But where are you?
Well, I've slid out of town again for a couple of days. I may have sent Lee a video. And look, I had
define
to indicate.
Couple. Hold on. Define couple.
Well, through Monday.
Like 9, 10?
9, like, no. Yeah. Well, maybe.
I was going to say, did you not leave like...
I ended up getting away later than I had said I was going to. So, but it's longer than a couple. You're fair to point that out.
Well, I know today's Wednesday and you're not leaving till like next Monday.
That's right.
And you're already feet on the... like in the water, laying on the dock, having a 9%er. Like
I sent
there.
Lee a video an hour or two ago saying, oh man, I'm pretty swamped here. I don't know if I'm going to be able to record today. And had to point out all the work. And it was just... yeah, picture of the ball game on the iPad out on the patio looking at the water, and it's been an okay day, man.
So, bases loaded, nobody out. What do you think happened next?
Hit into a double play.
Yep.
Yeah. Who did it?
5-4.
Kirk.
Was it Kirk?
I don't have it up in front of me, but
yeah, okay. 5-4 now. Okay. With 2 out, runners at first and third, because of course.
You said there a moment ago before we fired up the recording, you had a beer you were interested to try, one that you were fairly certain I wouldn't have enjoyed had we been in person. So what are you going with here today, man?
I am going with, now I really enjoy, and I've told you this before, I think, a lot of the beers that Cowbell Brewing Company makes, and it's out of southwestern Ontario, it's up kind of near, you know, Grand Bend, that area.
Yeah.
But a lot of their beers, the first beer I ever had from Cowbell was a Kolsch that I was like, wow, that's good. Mm-hmm. And then as I moved along and, you know, into some other things and their Cerveza, and they've had a couple other ones that have been in some packs, some summer packs and winter packs that I've really liked. But this is the first one where I'm really questioning it. Like, I find this brewery kind of a little bit ahead of some of the others for me, okay, just because I've had five or six different beers from them and I like them all.
Right.
And so I'm usually not that guy. Like I'll really like one or two, but then by three or four, they don't have enough for me to keep going. And it's like, I really like the one or two from that brewery, but they don't necessarily have six that I like, oh sure, yeah, that's a great beer.
Right.
And so this is one of the breweries that's kind of up there for me. Like they have a little bit more that I feel strongly about, but I don't know about this one. And I am using it a little bit as a tool here, and you're going to hear it here in a second. A tool to try out myself without having to subject it to you, because I'm pretty sure you might not even take a sip, but
come on, I'm usually game to try.
I know you're always game to try, which is what I really like. And by the way, 5-4 final, the Milwaukee Brewers defeat the Toronto Blue Jays.
Your Toronto Blue Jays.
Every like bases loaded, nobody out. How do we find a way out of this?
Unbelievable.
Without tying the game,
well, and we'll yet completely believable.
Oh, completely believable. Yeah, so, lose 5-4. So okay. I'm having the Cowbell Mimosa Sour Ale.
A mimosa sour.
So on the back, this easy drinking, brunch friendly sour ale features a generous serving of orange juice,
any beer
natural
is
citrus.
Friendly if you want it to be.
Exactly. It's 5 o'clock somewhere. A breakfast classic. But I was surprised when I got it. I'm like, okay, that's fine. I'll try it. I'm sure it'll be flavorful, but it'll be like a 3%er. But it's a 4.9.
Okay.
So I'm not a huge sour person anymore because I'm just so sour in general that I don't need a beer.
Took the bullet right out of my gun there, man.
If you beat people to the punch,
yeah, they can't hit.
You're not hard. You're not hard to do that with. So it's quite easy here.
All right.
Yeah. So the hockey stuff. Yeah. Hey, Adam, how's your broken leg when you jumped off a cage at 50? You dumbass.
Things don't heal up as quickly as they used to.
No. Hey, I'm gonna jump off the top of a cage at 50 and think it's a good idea.
Oh, I'm out for 8 months.
I'm just mad at him because I like him, not because I actually dislike him.
Right.
It's like, just why would you came back? You worked so hard. Why would you do something stupid like that? Like it wouldn't have paid off anyway. So anyway, I'm gonna take a sip of this, and you're gonna tell me what you're drinking,
Adam. That's a Paddlin, and I am going with something from the Five Paddle Brewing Company out of Whitby, Ontario. And this is one, I don't know, I'm not sure whether you would have been into this one or not. You might have given it a shot. You probably would have. This is a Honey Vanilla.
Oh, dude, like I'm already in. I don't care what you say after this.
Well, and so it says here on the can, Honey Vanilla Wheat. Now, it doesn't say that in the Untappd description, but I'm going to trust the can label more than the Untappd description.
Yeah. I'm going to trust what's in front of me as opposed to what's on the internet.
Right.
The interweb,
The internet has never steered me wrong before.
No, I can see by your life choices. Yes, that's
and
true.
You either, good listener. The internet has brought you to us, so it must be doing something right. This comes in at, I believe, 5.2%. It's called Home Sweet Home. Like I said, a honey vanilla wheat, kind of golden ale, blonde ale. We're going to see what that's all about. I've honestly been a fan of Five Paddles for a long time. I've talked for years now on the show about them, being introduced to them through Andy Nita's annual advent calendar. And then through the pandemic, I spent some time down in Kawartha Lakes and they Whitby not being that far, and just tried like almost everything they had. And honestly, they became one of my kind of top two or three favorite breweries. Now, it's been a while since I've tried much of their stuff. I understand they're under new ownership, but that's not going to turn me away. I'm going to give them a chance, obviously. And this one, I think, predates the new ownership. This is a recipe they've had for a while. So looking forward to trying that. 5.2% Home Sweet Home, a honey vanilla. What's your first impression of yours that you got going?
Well, my first impression is I'd rather have yours than mine. just because of how it sounds. Like, I've always been really interested in how vanilla works into a beer, because I love vanilla, but I haven't always loved vanilla in beers.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm a big vanilla person, love any type of, like, when vanilla is in different coffees, or if it's in, like, you put vanilla in a lot of baking, I'm like, add more. I really like vanilla. But in beers, it's always a little bit different. But mine here, I would say it's surprisingly at 4.9, it doesn't taste like 4.9. Hmm. And it really does taste like you could have this, well, you can always have it at brunch or breakfast or whatever you said, because yeah. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, everywhere. Right. But this is truly one of those that if you gave it to me and I was having brunch, I would be like, oh, okay, it's like a 2 or 3 percenter, getting ready for the day, enjoying, you know, a little fruit with breakfast. It's not as sweet as I like it, but it's a sour. So again, I'm not into the sours as much as I used to be.
Right.
And so I would say for what they describe it as, it's everything that they say that it is.
This one, honestly, man, kind of bummed. There's nothing wrong with it, but as you and I both always say, bring it, right? I'm getting a little more honey, and vanilla, if done right, is a strong flavor. I'm getting almost no vanilla out of this. There is some honey to it, so it's nice. Like, it's fine, but in terms of, you know, teeing it up the way we did and it was promising a lot, and it's only okay. And as I've said a few times before on this podcast, I'm not going to allow it to sour me on the brewery, because they've done a lot of things quite well, but this wouldn't be one that I would reach for again.
Well, I've just gone on their website, mm-hmm. and to look at some of the ones I am definitely interested in. They have a Beer Babes Cherry Saison collaboration one, which is, you know, I'm a big cherry beer guy.
Right.
They have a citrus fruited ale that has orange, tangerine, lemon, and lime. Like, I'm in. And they have a coconut cream pie ale.
It is delicious, man.
Which I know that you're a big coconut guy, so, or just a nut. I can't remember which one. You are cocoa, though. So, yeah.
All right. But they do nice stuff, man. They really do.
Firing on all cylinders today. They look like they got a lot of stuff. A Mexican-style lager. A Royal Canadian Stout, Midnight Paddler, that I'm sure that you've had
great.
Before.
Yep.
So they look like they got a lot of good stuff.
On this day, 25 years ago,
yes,
the Pittsburgh Penguins defeat the Detroit Red Wings in Game 7 of the 2009 Stanley Cup.
15 years ago.
It is 15 years ago. You are correct, sir. As I'm showing the fact that I've been out in the sun for a while here today.
Yeah. I was going to say 25 years ago, no.
Yeah, the Dallas Stars won the Stanley Cup. in Buffalo, and it's no goal and all that stuff.
Yeah.
No. It, you are correct. It's 15 years ago, the Pittsburgh Penguins defeat the...
we can talk about Buffalo getting hosed on a couple of calls or like major things.
We'll have time for that over the summer when things get a little dry.
I'd love to do a show on all the Buffalo failures. And like, honestly, like wide right is amazing.
Yes.
But that Dallas, Buffalo, no goal. How about the Music City Miracle? like, there's just so many good things that have happened to Buffalo, like getting ahead of Kansas City with 15 seconds left, and somehow Mahomes has time for 3 plays to go down the field and beat you again.
Whoops.
Like, that's the fourth one I can think of right away.
And they're going full circle. They're bringing Lindy Ruff back. What could go wrong? What could go wrong? So I just want to, you know, I bring up incorrectly the Pittsburgh Penguins thing 15 years ago versus 25. That was Evgeny Malkin winning the Conn Smythe trophy. If you recall, they have that one last face-off at the end of Game 7. It comes back to Lidstrom. I think it was Max Talbot is diving to try and block it. Fleury is there. Like, there's that one last gasp. One of my favorite memories of that particular Stanley Cup final is someone asking Max Talbot before the game, like, you know, every Game 7 in a Stanley Cup final has a hero. Someone's going to go home a legend. Who on, you know, if your team's going to come through this, who's it going to be? And he goes, I don't know, probably me. And for the rest of the summer, like at his Stanley Cup party, there are probably me t-shirts that everyone's wearing.
Oh, better than probably not.
Right. No, you're right about that, man. Every team's got a different angle, I guess.
Probably not.
But the reason I bring it up is that that Penguins team reminds me a little of this Oilers team, right? You got the two big stars, whether it was Crosby and Malkin and now McDavid and Draisaitl. A cast behind them that is capable, certainly, but not as high octane as the guys leading them.
Yeah.
The one big difference, I guess, would be Fleury versus Skinner, and I know who I'm taking in a showdown in that situation. Is that in your mind? Do you see the same comparisons? Like, are these teams? Is there something there now in terms of drawing that? Now Pittsburgh had to get there once in 08. They lost first. This is Edmonton's first crack at getting there. The Oilers guys are older than the Penguins guys were when they finally got there. It's not a perfect analogy, but is there any lines to be drawn there in your mind?
Well, unfortunately, you bring up a good point. I was even going to say, like, you know who you're taking now in Marc-Andre Fleury, but back then, I'm not sure that you would take Marc-Andre Fleury in that spot. People did not think
that was a little later, wasn't it? Like,
he really, like, after giving up that goal in the World Juniors and kind of costing
Patrick
Canada,
O'Sullivan, yeah,
like, he just couldn't get
take the gold pads
while.
Off, dude.
And, like,
we were so hung up on that.
I know, but he was so good, but he would still make that mistake.
Yeah,
that you kind of just didn't trust him. And
in the two later cups, he loses his job to Matt Murray both times. So it's been an odd career for him.
Yeah, it certainly has. And he's been a very good goalie at times, but there's been times where he's not. Like, people made fun of the fact of how bad he was in the big spot. So,
and he's going home with three cup rings with double birds, right?
He's doing just fine. Like, and he's not worried about much. But the comparison that you make, I think, is a really good one because of the high end. That's what I mean. It hurts me to say this. And we'll get to your Stanley Cup picks a little later. But the comparisons are a very good one. And I think the only thing that I even have to rebut it a little bit is the fact of what you brought up at the end. And it's what I was worried about going into. Like, we're only two games into what's possibly six or seven. So we're not where, like, everyone who's just giving the cup to Florida.
No.
It's not happening yet. But the thing I was concerned about the most that we brought up last week was the fact that a lot of the big stars – and, you know, Crosby went through his time and Gretzky and Lemieux and not Lemieux. It was Crosby, Gretzky. I'm trying to think of the other, like, top guys. But they all went and they kind of lost and they watched and they saw beforehand. And I was worried about that for Edmonton, that Florida got there and they watched last year.
Yzerman had to go a couple of times, right?
Like, and that McDavid and Draisaitl are so good that they can pull guys along. But when you get to this level, it's, you know, Gretzky always says the regular season, the playoffs, and the Stanley Cup in the three different seasons.
Yeah.
It's the great, great players that need a taste of losing to go, yeah, this is a completely different season. And I was a little worried about that. But the rest of the comparison and things are a really good one because –
like Bouchard, maybe, is your Letang. Like, there's lines to be drawn, right? Like,
Bouchard's a great comparison to Letang, who I don't think Christopher Letang still gets some of the credit that he deserves. He has now because of the longevity, and he had some health scares that he came back from, and everyone wants to rally behind him.
Yep.
But it's not like 5 years ago we're like, oh yeah, Christopher Letang, man. Best.
Well, and in 2009, you were counting on that guy to be offense and just cringing hard when you asked him to defend, which isn't dissimilar to Evan Bouchard. So.
Right. But that's the way that things are going. And I do think we're going to see a little pushback, but I'm very worried that this Florida team that's given up, like, Ekholm's got the only goal, right?
Yeah.
For Edmonton.
Yeah.
And now this Edmonton team that hasn't scored a goal other than Ekholm has to win 4 times in 5 games against the team that watched somebody else win it last year, and now they're up 2 games to none. And I'm not saying that they're not going to push back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that the Hill now, it's not just being down 2-0 in the Stanley Cup final. It's being down 2-0 against a team that watched somebody else hoist that cup in front of them last year, and now that team's 2 games away.
Lever, it might surprise you to know that as we set up to do these shows, I make notes. I got things I want to ask you. I don't even know how to throw this question to you, because I don't know if you threw it at me, if I would have a good answer. Like, I wanted to ask you, are you surprised the road that we've taken to Edmonton being down 2 games? And yet, there's 2 roads. Like, in game one, they dominated and got bobbed, right? That's just how that played out. They were clearly the better team. And in game two, look, until the third period, and then sometimes score effects takes over a little bit, Florida was dummying Edmonton, and Edmonton, like, it was almost the exact same script, except Skinner wasn't doing what Bobrovsky had done. And if you ever thought he was capable of doing so, that's really on you. It was almost a complete role reversal. And Edmonton had, in game two, only 8 high danger scoring chances, only 3 at 5-on-5. That is their second lowest of the season.
Yeah.
And, like, that is wild to me. I know Florida is good defensively, but they're keeping them to the outside. Like, Edmonton's not getting close, or didn't, at least in the second game, did not get close to the net. I have time for that age old expression, you're not in trouble till you lose at home. They're in trouble. When you look at the 2 different games, like, which one of them to you is more what we should be expecting to see? The pendulum has been wild in both directions.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm going to stop telling you that you could come up with good questions. Maybe you should come up with some good answers instead of some good questions.
No, I don't have answers. I bring people on and I ask
questions. But the answer to your question is actually a very simple one. Did you watch the New York Rangers series? And did you watch Florida absolutely dominate that series from the beginning to the end, even though the Rangers won 2 games?
Right.
Like, the Florida Panthers are the best team in the National Hockey League, I think. And I think when you watch from – it's easy to say because they, you know, were up top at the regular season. But it's watching these playoff games where you know they're going up against other good teams. And they're like, the New York Rangers are a good team. I don't think the Rangers were as good as some people thought, but every game.
But Dallas was a great team. We all loved Dallas, and Edmonton dealt with that. Like, they're not.
Yeah, I didn't love Dallas.
Okay. All right.
No, I
did. I did. Like, I'll say it. They were my pick to come out of the West, and they got dummied by the Oilers. Like,
yeah, which is fair. But I just think if you go back now and look at how Florida has played all playoffs.
Yeah.
Game one is a little bit of the anomaly where if you're an Oilers fan, I'd be way more concerned that you didn't win game one than what happened in game two. Because in game two, it's kind of like, okay, Florida's at home. They've been doing this to a lot of good teams.
Yeah.
It's probably going to happen. Like, I think at the beginning,
that was
the
issue, right? If Edmonton was going to play like that in game one, you have to have game one. Like, it's.
Yes, and that's the big issue with it.
Yeah.
And so it's more about the fact that this is what Florida has done now against really good teams. And Edmonton's a really good team, mm-hmm. but they've done this now repeatedly. And again, this is their 8th playoff series.
Right.
In what is...
And that's where my Pittsburgh comparison falls apart, right? Like, Pittsburgh got on the horse fast. And
yeah, but this is their 8th playoff series in, what is it, like
2015
16 months?
Yes. Sorry, like Florida.
Florida. Last year and this year.
You're right.
And it's like 16 months, and now it's their 8th series.
Not even 16 months. We're talking like 14 months.
Yeah, my math is not good. Yeah. But I think they know what they're doing now. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, and it doesn't, not that it doesn't matter. We're going to see, like,
and they're not gooning it up either, right? Like, all that scrum stuff we expected, we saw some of it late in game two, but that was Edmonton instigated. Edmonton was melting down. You're spearing guys in the nuts and you're, you know, hitting Barkov in the head. Now someone's getting over the rear naked choke. I was surprised to see that not penalized. But Florida seems to have learned, like, we have to play our style. We have to be irritating as shit to play against. But some of the other stuff, the post-whistle stuff, has to go. And they've done that. And I think Edmonton was expecting to be on the power play more than they have been, and Florida hasn't given them that.
But why would you?
No, like, I understand as a conscious choice, your strategy would be don't give them power plays, but you're built the way you're built, and Florida's been responsible.
Okay, so let's just go through here a little bit of Florida's path this year so far.
Mm-hmm.
And who they've beat. Okay, they've beat...
Yeah, you get the sad sack Islanders, right?
What's up?
In the first round, did they not have the sad sack?
No, they had Tampa.
Not in the first round. Oh, they did. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're right. You're right.
I knew I was watching a bad Carolina Islanders series. And
it
that's
was
why
Carolina Islanders and it was Rangers Capitals. Those are that's who got the hapless losers.
So my whole point here is that Florida has beat Tampa, Boston, the Rangers, and now Edmonton. And I think if you piled up those teams and went, who's the best, who's the worst, like rank these teams 1 to 4, where are you putting Edmonton in that group? And I'm not trying to belabor the point, but I'm also trying to go back to last year and go, Florida had to beat Boston, Toronto, Carolina, before they played
record-setting Boston.
Right, before they played Vegas.
Yeah.
So they have not only – they're not only in their 8th series, but tell me which series that you would go, oh, well, that's a walkover.
The Toronto they played,
one. Yeah. But no, I know that you're being a little self-deprecating.
Only a little. Like, but they dummied Toronto.
Yeah, well, they beat – did you remember that they beat Carolina 4 straight last year?
No,
Carolina
I didn't.
Was – Carolina's a good team.
Carolina's a very good team, and they just walked them.
They just walked. So my whole point is that they're in their 8th series, and if I look at all of those individual teams and I go, okay, Boston from last year where Boston had a 3-1 lead and had the record-setting regular season, you know, a Leaf team that was supposedly on the cusp, a Carolina team that was ready for prime time.
President's Trophy winning Rangers this year.
Yeah,
two-time cup champions Tampa this year. Like they're not fucking around.
They have played the who's who, and I don't even know if I went through all of the series in the last 14 months that Florida has played. I don't know which team's the worst because they're all pretty good.
Yep.
And I know, look, it's the playoffs, but not every path is the same.
No.
And Florida has played all of these teams that I would consider very, very good hockey teams, and they are 6-1 in those series and ready to go 7-1 and maybe win a Stanley Cup. And so I don't know that it's as much – this is a very long-winded way of saying in the first game, Edmonton had a chance and they needed to win that hockey game, and they didn't. And the game two was more like, yeah, that's kind of what Florida does.
Yeah.
And
that was always the problem coming out of game one. Florida played like shit, but Bob was great and gave him that game. And everyone said, look, I don't expect Bob to be that great the rest of the series, but I do expect Florida to be better in general. And
guess what?
And they were.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's easier to do, though. Like, I don't want to give Florida too much credit. Easier to do with CeCe not in the lineup because, CeCe's in the lineup, It's very difficult, and you saw how difficult it was for Florida to get their chances in game one, and they managed to win that game despite CeCe and the Oilers dominating. You take CeCe out of the lineup, the Oilers don't dominate.
You know what, Lever?
They get absolutely manhandled in a lot of areas. They can't get the puck. They can't get quality shots on goal. Guess who's coming back in the lineup for game 3, baby? It's Cody CeCe.
You know what? You know what, Lever? In a world now that is nothing but spin, I love the spin you have put on that. You have taken this and turned it into something.
Those facts. I was spinning facts.
Because I was, as you obviously know, was just about to ask you how you felt about
your mind work.
Yeah, your boy who you went to bat for last week and did not have a very good game one.
Nope,
and I messaged you about it and you said it's not his fault they didn't score, which I suppose is true enough, but that's not his job. His part of the job, he did not do well. Game two, they scratched him.
Yeah.
And I, you know, we don't have to name names here, but I know I was not the only one to message
you. I'll name them. Okay. I'll name them all. Okay? All of those wannabe sports talk show hosts that think that they're like the smartest sports people in the world were all over me about Cody Ceci. Look at Cody Ceci and like he's scratching. I actually got a couple of game, set, and match argument over. Yeah, I didn't hear a lot from these smart people after the game. When Florida dominated, won the game, and really looked better when CeCe was out of the lineup than looked when he was in the lineup. But I'm going to give you at least a little something here.
Okay.
And I took your text about how well he handled the press box.
So I texted Lever and said, because your point had been, look, in the last minute, the coach trusts him, puts him in all the biggest situations. So I texted Lee and was giving him credit. Yeah, they trusted him to stare down the popcorn bowl and to handle that long walk from the press box and to have to face the media about
which he did.
Yeah, yeah. He handled all those things beautifully. And,
really well, yeah. Really well. Now, I will grant you that the only thing I'm going to give to people in this argument is the fact he didn't play well in game one. And I think when you do have...
And neither did Nurse. Like, that pair was disastrous.
But when you have a defense core that's quite frankly not that good, and then you have somebody in the defense core not playing well, you can't afford to continue to play that guy. Well, you need to sit.
Are you not making my point from last week that this defense core defensively is not that good? And so someone's going to have to take those last minute defensive zone face-offs. And,
well, no, I'm not.
You're not going that far.
No,
okay.
With the Stanley Cup on the line, Cody Ceci's on the ice defending a one-goal lead to get to the Stanley Cup.
Well, like, you already went with me that Evan Bouchard isn't the guy to do it. Is it Jesper Boqvist or Brett Kulak? Is it Vincent Desharnais?
No, Desharnais is actually.
So at some point, you just run out of options.
Yeah, but that's a terrible argument of running out of options.
Well, you know what? It's the one Chris Knobloch went with when he scratched him the next night. Yes, it is.
Anyway, I like the fact that, look, if a guy's not playing well, you don't have a very good defense core. So if somebody's actually really struggling, take him out of the lineup. Yeah. I don't disagree with that. And so did he deserve to sit after his performance in game one? Yeah. He did. Just like when Desharnais wasn't playing well against Dallas.
Or against anyone.
But when it's really bad, there's a game where you're like, oh boy, that guy is a little overwhelmed right now.
Right.
You need to take him out.
And well, the difference in this situation, right, is he's paired with Nurse, and that didn't work against Dallas either, or against Vancouver. And eventually they split them up, and it was okay. It wasn't great, but it was better. And for whatever reason, in game one, they threw them back together in the Stanley Cup final. And of course, it was terrible, which I think most people saw coming. And instead of, you know, trying to maybe just split them up again for game two, they went, no, we're putting this one on CeCe. You're going out. And as I said, he wasn't good, but neither was Nurse. But Nurse is making $9 million and he helps you offensively a little bit. So he stays in. Now, he looked like he was in some pain. Through game two. So Chris Knobloch did say on Wednesday he expects Nurse to play. I don't know that he was asked. I didn't see anybody tweeting about whether CeCe will get back in or what that's going to look like. But they're beat up a little bit. Vander Kane looks like he's playing in pain. There was some talk. Chris Knobloch did say he expects Corey Perry to draw back in. He didn't say who for. I would imagine, just speculating, Vander Kane, right? Like if he's hurting, and it doesn't look like he's comfortable to sit down on the bench, right? They kept showing him standing up, and
But with a couple of days between games in the Stanley Cup final, I'm not putting it past anybody to be back in the lineup,
sure.
And I think
coaches are always going to fuck with you a little bit. Right?
And the one thing I'm really interested to see is like, okay, Florida's probably the best team in the NHL. And when they're at home and they get their matchups and other teams, you know, have to kind of relinquish the matchup a little bit, Paul Maurice is really good at that. He knows his players, the players, you know, he's got great players, but he's really good and the players know what their rules and responsibilities are. And now it's really the test of how much can Knobloch do to get some of his guys away from what Florida has done to them by taking away the middle of the ice, by putting some things in. So this is the Stanley Cup. You're going to get a couple days off. The coaches get a long time to prepare. And I totally – it's not about until you lose a game at home. It's more about until you get the matchups that you want on the ice consistently.
Which happens at home.
Right. No, I know. But that's – it needs to be said. Like, it's not just –
you're just upset. You've had to say to me, good point, Matt, a couple too many times. And you're not willing to do
it
one more.
No, but sometimes when people say that, it's like – oh, it's because of the crowd and the home ice advantage, and the guys get psyched up to play.
I think the crowd
play,
is often overstated,
like,
yeah.
Oh, it's nothing to do with it. It actually has to do everything with
and it can actually go the other way, right? Like, it can put the pressure on you.
If Florida scores early, and Edmonton
the mood could get sour.
Oh, and Edmonton gets a power play and they don't score, it's like, oh boy, you're going to hear that, like, tense crowd, which actually doesn't do the players any good. But it is about the matchups and what Knobloch's going to be able to do to get some of his better players away from what has happened so far.
Yeah.
And that is the thing that, with a couple of days off and the travel, and there will be a little bit of hype, what can Knobloch do? I don't know, but he does have two of the greatest players in the world. So he's going to have to find a way to free those guys up a little bit, because as you said, you're watching that team get suffocated right now.
Yeah.
And they didn't get suffocated in game one, but Florida has suffocated a lot of teams where every game in that Rangers series, game two in this series, like other series that they played, I don't think we actually paid attention to how much they dominated Tampa, and that Tampa's a really good team.
Yeah.
Now, they're not, like, Stanley Cup winning.
No, they're on their last gasp, but they're still good,
They're on the backside, and Florida dominated them. And so I think when you start to look at the totality of what the Panthers have done, man, I just don't think Edmonton's going to have what it takes to beat them four times in five games after they've just shown too much consistency in what they've done here over the last 2 years to think now that they're two games away. And they got, you know, they got to win two of the next five to win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Tell me that that's not happening with this group, right? Like,
yeah, well,
it's going to be tough.
Edmonton's in very tough. And a week ago when I brought up the travel miles, you were disinterested, and that's fair enough. But as we sit here on Wednesday, Edmonton flew home on Tuesday. Florida decided we'll practice at home and then fly out on Wednesday. Not surprisingly, a literal monsoon has rolled into Florida and delayed their flight. They were hoping to take off at 1 Eastern. At 1 Eastern, everyone was still at the practice facility being told, yeah, you're not going anywhere. A little while later, it was said, well, you'll get out. Maybe you'll land 8 o'clock in Edmonton. They're now saying that's going to be closer to 10. As you and I sit here right now, we don't have any more info than that, but just an interesting wrinkle in terms of how this is all going to shake loose. You know, they fly private. It's not like this is going to be horribly uncomfortable for the players, but, you know, should they happen to roll in at 3 a.m. or something, that that could be interesting as well. So,
yeah, okay, well, do me a favor. When they roll in at 3 a.m., get back to me. And until then, I don't care.
I'm going to get up. I'm going to phone you at 3 a.m.
Dude, I'm going to answer the phone and be so excited to talk to you. To think, because I know 5 minutes in, you're going to, like, rock set fade like a flower, dude. Like, you're going to be 5 minutes in and then gone.
Dude, if anything, at 3 a.m., if I'm calling you, it's a joyride. Let's I'm taking a break.
What it is very dangerous for you to talk this way, okay?
You know Lee's a little bit dangerous.
I always have the look, I can tell you that. Na 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 na
All right, we're back in. Matt Robinson, Lever Sage. Hello, you fool. I loathe you. I wanted to mention...
That's most impressive you've been so far. Holy cow.
Low bar. I'm running with a second pint here, Lever. Because, you know, if we were in person, that's how this would go. But
that's how this would work.
Yeah. So this one, I can't remember if I've had it on the show before. I've absolutely had it down here before. It comes from the Lindsay Brewing Company. This is their Hazy Hot Rod Northeast IPA. So looking forward to try that. We're stepping it up just a little bit because, you know, it's lakeside. It's, you know, like if it wasn't, I might not.
Is it gorgeous there today?
About 23, mostly clear. And that's about right for me. I don't need 30, right? Like, I don't need any part of that. So, but I will say, when mentioning the Lindsay Brewing Company, they are tied to a place called the Pie-Eyed Monk. And if you're cruising through Central Ontario on Highway 7 at some point, and you got a little time, go into the Pie-Eyed Monk. Look, obviously, get yourself a couple of beers from the Lindsay Brewing Company. But the pizza that they make at the Pie-Eyed Monk, it's like one of those wood oven, man, they make great pizzas.
So where exactly is the Pie-Eyed Monk?
It's in Lindsay. I don't have the address off the top of my head.
Okay.
But
how far off the beaten path?
Not far at all. We're talking like 3 minutes off of Highway 7. Yeah.
So okay.
It's worth the trip to Lindsay, as they say.
I've never heard anyone say that.
All right.
Except for Ed Hand. Do you know Ed Hand?
I don't, but you know who else would say it is our buddy Tim Baines.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ed Hamm was the voice of the 67s on television for a long, long time.
Okay.
On community television. Tim Baines, yes. It's worth the drive to Acton.
It is worth the drive to Acton is, of course, the actual expression. But, yeah, Tim Baines on the show a year or so ago.
Anybody listening would know that, though.
Eh, you never know.
Worth the drive to Acton, you think?
Yeah. If you've heard that phrase before, let us know on social media at Tall Can Audio.
I'd love to hear from people. I hope you have.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I would often say things when I was on the air with all those like really smart guys. But so
sorry,
I shouldn't have laughed.
Like, I don't know why I laughed.
No, you laugh because you know it's true. So when you have them in your studio, tell them to their face they're not that smart. So I would say things like easy peasy, and they'd all look at me like, what?
Right.
I'm like, nobody in their 30s knows what that is. I'm like, what are you talking about? And a couple of times I would say sit in the catbird seat, and they looked at
me
like,
I'm not familiar with that.
See again.
But I'm not in my 30s, Lever.
I want you to put that up, okay? Sitting in the catbird seat, I want you to put that to a poll.
Okay.
And say, I don't need you to like know everything about it. I need you to react if you're listening to this or you see it to go, have you heard of this and do you know what it means? If I said to you...
So the poll is, are you familiar with the term...
Yes.
...sitting in the catbird seat?
That's correct.
Okay. We'll throw it out there.
I'm also going with another pint here.
Yeah.
And this is Ritterbier from Braumeister...
Oh, yeah.
Brewing Company in beautiful downtown Carleton Place. And this is one of their seasonals. And our Ritter beer is a crafted classic Munich style Dunkel. A clean light.
Love a Dunkel, Lever. I'm a big Dunkel guy.
A clean light malt forward beer with a hint of cereal sweetness and finishing with notes of caramel and toasted brown bread. And I waited for this one as well because it is a... Like, I've had some of the Braumeister stuff. They're one of those companies that they don't do a lot of different things.
No.
But they do what
they do.
They've
got a second spot now in town, right? Like,
Yeah.
I went there with Josh and Trides there a year or two ago. Had like a – I could be mistaken. We had a few. It's some sort of like Polish food. I know Braumeister is obviously not Polish, but – some sort of agreement, right? Well, these two places were going to sort of combine on those. But anyway, great beers, great food. So I don't know.
Yeah, and they don't do a ton, like I said, but they do what they do well. And they have, they have a darker beer. They have a blonde Hell's Lager.
Yeah, it's a nice one.
Like I said, they only have kind of three or four.
Yeah, core, not dissimilar to the guys I speak of, like Vimy, who will try a couple of them, but there's a core four or five beers. This is what we do, and we do it very, very well, and that's similar to Braumeister. Right?
Inspired by Europe, crafted in Canada, it's a 4.7%, and I really enjoyed this one. I don't get the hint of cereal sweetness as much. Because, like, when I have a hint of sweetness, it's like 5 tablespoons of sugar and not like 1.5. Okay. So I'll make my coffees or different things, and someone will try it and go, "Oh my God, that's the sweetest thing I've ever ever had." I'm like, "I actually just put a little bit in there. Like, what are you talking about?" So, but this is actually better than I thought it was going to be. Not that I thought it was going to be bad, that it's a wow. This is good. It is crisp and clean. It's got that malt forward as they talk about. It really comes across, and I don't taste the cereal sweetness as much as I do kind of the caramel and the brown bread. But if you like that kind of darker, a little bit more flavorful tight beer,
right,
like a Dunkel is, then you will enjoy this one.
Earlier today on Wednesday, Lee, we got news that Jerry West had passed away. Yes. And you and I have talked about this a little bit before. You're a little more tied into the NBA than I am. But I'm certainly familiar with the legacy of the man and the career that he had, first of all, as a Laker, and then owning the Lakers not that long ago. There was that new, was it Amazon Prime that did the Showtime documentary?
Showtime.
Or not documentary, but show, anyway. I'm just sort of curious, as someone who keeps a closer eye on the NBA than I do, what you think, you know, or what your first thoughts were when you heard that that had happened and the legacy that he's going to leave behind. I think my favorite piece of it, again, as an NBA simpleton, is that's the guy whose silhouette is in the NBA logo. I think that's kind of neat, right? That's one of those pieces of trivia that they'll never take away from them, right? When you're
If you asked, people that, not a lot of people would know the answer to that.
Yeah, and that's kind of cool, right? Like, it's not your face, it's not whatever, but it's as close to being, like, permanently eulogized. And that's a terrible word to use because it was done while he was alive, but, like, that legacy will stay. That's the guy behind the logo of the NBA. It doesn't get a whole lot bigger than that. When you think of the name Jerry West, what do you think about?
I think about kind of the ultimate, having done everything in the game. When you are somebody that can bring Magic Johnson or some of the greats of the game to a knee in tears because of the person that you were, it's more about hearing the stories of, you can go down the accolades for Jerry West, but the guy held every position that you could have. He was a GM. He was, as you said, an owner. He drafted players. He hired other people to be in their prominent positions. Mm-hmm. And when I look at somebody like this and what they've meant to the game, it's not only about what they have done. It's the other people under the, in football, we'd always talk about like the Belichick tree or, where all of the people who ever worked under Bill Belichick or worked under a certain organization. And I think of Jerry West as that guy, that he did so much for creating organizations that could work long-term and putting the people in places. And when somebody passes, you always hear about what a great family person that they were, and I'm sure that they were. And I don't know Jerry West from a hole in the ground, so I'm sure that he was. But when you hear about some of the people that he put in positions to then succeed, I don't think of – like the NBA sometimes can come across as a very me-first league, right? That that a lot of people in the league care about themselves first, and then they care about other people after if they're getting all of the accolades that they need. And that to me is kind of how a little bit that I grew up, and Michael Jordan was such a big personality, and he's probably still the greatest player to have ever lived. But he also was a lot about, especially in his career, was a lot about Michael. And Michael did what wanted, and there he wasn't.
And if we're being fair, it's been to the league's credit that players have done this, right? Like, they have forwarded their PA. They have forwarded the – they have more control than players in almost any – but you are right. That takes a certain me-first mentality to get that done. And so it's good and bad.
I'm not saying that there's everything wrong with it and they're horrible beings and all this stuff. I'm just saying that a lot of personalities in that
league – it's a different perspective,
think about themselves first and put themselves first. And it's the same argument, like, okay, if you're going to tear down the NBA for it, and I don't like some of the people that do that, and I'd be a hypocrite if I said otherwise, but I also think when we sit here and talk about that the NHL doesn't have any personality and they don't have any superstars, and why do we keep hearing the same cliches over and over? Well, you can't have it both ways.
No, you're right about that.
It's like, okay, like, do I want to hear?
Well, as soon as someone speaks out, they get smacked down. Like, well, then what do you expect is going to happen, right? Like,
exactly.
They'll shut up.
The NBA, when the greatest players in the league can do that, the culture isn't the same of growing up in the NHL as it is in the NBA. But to my point, back to Jerry West, it's like, I never think of Jerry West as that guy. I think of Jerry West as doing so much for the game, so much for his organization, so much for other people, so much for putting people in positions to succeed and trying at points to stay out of it. I think the fact that a lot of people listening right now, I would doubt, and look, if you're a massive NBA fan, fine, like you prove me wrong.
Sure, he's got
probably
a legacy. Yeah.
You're the 1% or 2%. But if a lot of people don't know a ton about Jerry West, that's more about how Jerry West conducted himself, because he should. That guy literally is part of the fabric of the association and made it what it is, and you don't know a lot about
him. Great player and a great executive, right? That's so rare. And we may never see that again. Like, we'll see players as part of ownership groups, but these teams now go for billions of dollars, and no matter how overpaid you think players might be, not a single one is going to retire and turn around and on his own buy a team or whatever. Like, that's not happening anymore. The thing that stands out to me about him is the relationship with Magic Johnson, because you very rarely see a owner player relationship quite like that. And that's part of you know, I, like I said, I'm not a huge NBA guy, but I will sit down and I'll watch something like the Showtime show that they put together, because I'm a sports guy. And that's what everybody's talking about. So, you know, I need to know on this show what that was all about. And so I'll sit down and I'll check that out. The Michael Jordan one, I don't know if you recall, and off the Last Dance, that's what it was called. It was supposed to come out in June of 2020. And then the pandemic set in and ESPN was like, fuck it, everyone's stuck at home. We're releasing it now. We're going to have ratings like we have never seen before in our lives. And that came out and it was incredible. But one of the things that Showtime illustrated, and just, you know, the history of the NBA, is this relationship between Magic and Jerry that sort of was incredibly unusual and helped build that Lakers brand. And as you suggest, a guy that was willing to, even as an owner, be open to listening to what players needed and helped to forward that movement. And of course, what ended up happening to Magic, this was a guy who stood beside him, which not everyone would have, right? At the time, it's so interesting to think now what we know about HIV and what we know about AIDS. And what, at the time that Magic had to tell everybody that that's the this, you know, the help me out, like the attitude around it, right? The it was a tough thing for Magic to do, and Jerry stood beside him. That wasn't a given back then.
No, and yeah, I mean what you're saying is that we're not quite as in 30 years
stigma.
Ago,
stigma is the word I was looking for.
We weren't ever even that close. Like, I think in some of the examples, and I'm not trying to stray too far, but even if you go back and watch shows, which I do all the time, like Friends or Seinfeld, yeah, or Cheers, yeah, or any of those shows, and you watch those shows, you're like, oh my God, they said that?
You're right.
Like, they got away with that. But at the time, it was like, okay, well, you can.
Yeah.
So when something like this, I think people don't quite understand where we were or where we weren't back when Magic Johnson
comes out and says, I'm HIV positive.
Yeah.
Get away from me. Get out of my league. Don't talk to me. You're gross. Exactly. That's what he was facing. And
yes. And Jerry West, as you said, stood beside him.
Yeah.
And never let him fall down. And no, it's a great point. It's a great point that you make. And that's kind of who I think, like when you ask me what I think about Jerry West, I think of the fact that he always was worried about somebody else or putting somebody else in a good spot or standing up for somebody or to create what he did. And for somebody as good of a player as he was and as good of an executive as he was in a league that promoted the kind of me first attitude, and it just wasn't anything like all of that.
No.
And that's why his legacy is going to be so great and what he did for the game.
Did you have a chance? I guess it was on Monday. So there was a bunch of stuff on TV. Did you have a chance to get a look at all at the PWHL draft?
I did. Yeah.
I thought it came off pretty well. I'm going to hand you the floor here and you can take it wherever you want. But I thought the presentation was pretty good. I saw some people who I'm not going to argue with because there's a lot of people who follow this league closer than me who were a little irritated with what they were calling the purple carpet ceremony. I guess it was a couple of men who called them girls instead of women. I don't want to weigh into that. I don't know enough about that, but the draft itself, Ottawa at 2 takes Danielle Serdakny, who that was interesting to me for a little bit, because only a few days before the draft, Lever, you probably saw this, that New York had replaced their head coach with the head coach from Colgate, who, of course, was Danielle Serdakny's head coach there, where she had dominated. And you kind of went, I wonder if they'll take Serdakny and Sarah Filliere might be available at 2. Now, look, I think Sarah Filliere, we all understand, is poised to be the next, you know, if anybody's going to be the next Poulin, she's the one set up to be that. And so maybe there's a little bit of wishful thinking there, right, that she might land in Ottawa. Danielle Serdakny, though, is killer at what she does. That is a top six center, probably within 2 years in the PWHL, a number one center who does the things that Ottawa struggled with in number one, gets to the net, is willing to do rebound. Like, you talk about size in women's hockey. This league has been more physical than any women's hockey we've ever seen. So I really liked the pick. You know, whether you want to weigh in on that, the draft in general.
I got a couple of things here. And number one, what you talked about before, I'm so happy that we are at a point where when you're always going to have kind of the people trying to tear something down. And that's just the world that we live in now, no matter what it is. When I kind of read and heard a couple of people, but read mostly about people trying to tear this down, I'm like, your arguments aren't even good anymore.
Not every step of the way, man. There's been someone in the replies, oh, well, shut up. Shut up.
Yeah. No, but that's always going to happen.
Yeah.
But I think when you get to a point where – like, at first, I think there are a lot of skeptical people that if people were trying to tear it down, they're like, hey, maybe they have a point.
Sure.
Maybe this is something that's tangible and that it's not going to work because of this.
The
or
show
this
me
or this.
Factor was real, right? Like,
yeah, exactly. That's a great term to be able, because I think there were a lot of people that thought it could, but they needed it to happen.
And then
so that we could show me. But now the people trying to tear it down, I almost laugh at. I go, your arguments are getting weaker and weaker and weaker. And the fact that you're still trying to do it, like, I used to care and be on the side of like, no, you can't say that and do that. And now I don't even care anymore because your argument is so bad that we're just moving on with everything. Like,
fair enough. And that's how
I feel about a lot of things that are said.
Lever, I mentioned on this show a lot, my brother-in-law who disagrees with me on just about everything. And at one point, this is like a year and a half ago, and I said, dude, there are still people out there who believe the world is flat. The rest, we're moving on. We can't wait for you, right? Like, some point, you're just like, yeah, fine. You're entitled to your viewpoint. The rest of us are carrying on. You do what you got to do.
And that's how I feel about it, because when you talk to people who go to games, when you watch the product yourself, when you understand, again, I know, look, the Minnesota thing hasn't been great.
It's ugly.
Since they won.
Yeah.
Right? It hasn't been great. And it's, I'm sad for the league that this is happening.
Yes.
But it's still not, like, think about what has happened now to have the champion of the league have this happen to them. And I still don't go, well, this isn't going to tear down the league or this isn't going to hurt.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a
It's a bad
story.
Look, but yeah, it's not going to kill them.
Exactly. And we weren't there a couple of years ago. But when you, to me, it's all about when you take people to the games and we can talk in legitimately, and I'm going to talk in a minute about like the legitimacy of the draft picks and who they should have drafted and why this player is better than that player. We weren't there before.
No.
And now we are, and we can have real legitimate discussions on that. This, it's not about that this woman isn't very good, this player. It's about this is the right fit for this organization. And
the athletes have been screaming for that. They don't want to talk about, look how good this is for the game, look how much we're moving. No, they want to be covered like our PK stinks because they want to talk hockey.
Yeah, I want to be mad at somebody on the ice for Ottawa because they suck.
The same way, that you'd have been mad at Morgan Riley or that you'd have been mad at Ridley Gregg or that was an odd two names to throw together. There's a history.
But people are mad at Cody Ceci.
Right.
That's fine.
Let's talk about us that way. That's what these players want.
And they deserve that because what comes with that is a little bit more accountability. And it's like the good players are going to be propped up. But then the players who are along for the ride that aren't that good, okay, well, time to be replaced because this is a great league.
Yeah.
Like this is a fun show. This is a place to be for like children and kids watching the game, and it's a great atmosphere.
And across the board, every time they opened the door to a bigger arena, the shit got sold. Every single time. Like
every time.
Yeah. And so is it sustainable right now for every game in every city to be at a 20,000 seat? So, no, it's not. But it doesn't have to be. We're at a takeoff point. And for these events, you know, in Ottawa, they could max that out for the home opener at 8,000. I think most of the rest of the year was 6,200. That was great, right? And then, you know, when you do the battle on Bay Street or whatever the hell they called it, I think it was the battle on Toronto, Montreal, 20,000 people. They did one in, you know, in a bunch of these markets. You opened up to the NHL build as soon as Toronto got out of...
Coca-Cola Center?
No, they got out of MLG, whatever it's called now. Mattamy. They were 2,900. When they got over to the Coca-Cola Coliseum for the playoff games, 8,000. Like, are they there for every night now at 8,000? I don't know, but it's absolutely on the grow, and that's the part you need to focus on. That's the part you need to care about, is that this is sustainable for the first time, and this draft was great. The personalities were great. They had all these interviews with these players. The number of Europeans who declared this year who weren't sold on it last year or who were tied into contracts in their European leagues.
And that's only going to get better.
Of course, man. it was so much fun to watch. One of the things I wanted to put to you here before we wrap up was, and maybe it ties back to a little about what you were talking about, and I guess I just want you to kind of compare and contrast or weigh this a little bit. I had seen a bunch of people speculating on Ottawa Hockey Twitter about this being, you know, this is a 7-round draft, and they had May Batherson, who is the sister of Drake Batherson, and Dara Greig, who is the sister of Ridly Greig. I saw multiple Ottawa, PWHL Ottawa followers, Ottawa Hockey fans saying, you have to target these people. This is the story. And that, perhaps to your point, man, I was like, you're looking at this all wrong. Like, and I'm not saying that's what the Ottawa management went in thinking. Is it fun for us if those two players end up in Ottawa because there's relationships there? Sure. But is it also interesting that May Batherson ends up in Montreal and now there's a story to be told between those two? Like, you can craft that story however you want to. It to me, to see people projecting that Ottawa needs to make sure they get Greig and Batherson in the PWHL draft does a disservice to the PWHL. No, you draft for what you need. You draft best player available. You don't go, hey, her brother's part of my NHL team, so we better go. That's wrong, man. That's not the way to do this.
Right, because you know what irked people at the end of this year? Losing.
Yeah.
And you know what creates a fan base? Winning. It's not about a player or two. Now, those storylines are great.
That would have been fun. But that can't be your...
And I'm the guy, though, that years and years ago was bellowing, okay? Bellowing for the Ottawa Senators to take Travis Konechny, okay?
Yeah.
I covered Travis Konechny. I knew Travis... Yeah, I was biased.
Sure.
But guess what? I thought, in my legitimate hockey opinion, that this guy was...
Well, it's not like Travis Konechny turned out to be a bust.
Well, my point is they took Colin White, and everyone's like, you can't take the hometown kid. You got to take the... And he's not from here, but he played the 67s. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you can't take... I'm like, it's not about that. He's just a really good player. And you might think Colin White's a good player, but I'm telling you, this kid's going to be a player. And look, now the kid's a player now, but it's about...
It just felt to me like Sens fans weighing in saying, hey, we got Ridly Greig and Drake Batherson, draft their sisters. That's not how you build a team. That's not.
So let me ask you before we wrap.
Yeah.
So the thing that interested me a lot is that the way that the National Hockey League is going, and I want to know the PWHL as much. I don't know it as much yet because I don't have the history.
Right? Brand new,
I don't have the history with it. So I would never draft a goalie in the third round.
Hmm.
So in the NHL.
Yep.
I just wouldn't do it. I've seen too many guys. There's just so many guys that don't blossom until their mid-20s, late-20s. You don't know who they are.
It's a risk. 18, but when it pans out, Carey Price can be there for you. Marc-Andre Fleury can be there for you.
They're few and far between.
100%, you're right.
With all of those picks. So Ottawa drafts a goalie in the third round. But I don't know the league as much, how much goaltending can come in and have that sort of influence to draft a goalie in the third round. Again, I don't know the answer. What I'm telling you is that I found this part really interesting because it now makes me go, okay, what is a goaltender more dominant in this league in the next 3 or 4 years as opposed to the NHL, where a goalie might not turn out for 6 or 7 years and you can't draft a goalie early in the NHL, but can you in the PWHL? It just sort of opens my mind to all of these possibilities. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether drafting a goalie in the third round is a really good move or a really bad move. But I found it really interesting that Ottawa did this, thinking this is where they needed to improve, and taking a third round pick on a bad team to go, hey, this is a need for us that we're going to take a risk on. I just thought that was really... I'm going to wait to see how this plays out, but I'm actually more invested in Gwyneth Phillips than I am on some of the other picks because I really want to see how this works out. And I think that that's great for the league, that I, and I'm sure other people, think that way. Do you know what I mean? Like,
of course. Okay, there's some intrigue here. Yeah.
Yeah, they took a risk in the third round. It's not about someone's sister or the name recognition.
That's
it's about,
all I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't draft for, we got the brother, let's go. That's not how you build a team. And so I'm with you on that. Oh. I think Gwyneth Phillips, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Someone will immediately let me know on Twitter. I think she was the first goalie to go.
She was. Yeah. And that's what interests me the most. It's like Ottawa decided in the third round.
Yeah.
We're going to be the first team to take a goalie because we think it's important and she's the best.
And one of the things that we're seeing after just 1 year, and so we're all just learning, right? Impact here. It's a new league. But I think, you know, when you read people like Haley Salvian, right? When you Kenzie Lalonde, people who are covering this every day, Cheryl Pounder, who I love, you know, these are people who are saying this year in the PWHL, the goaltending was out in front of the forwards, right? And it's because not all of the top forwards had been drafted. A lot of people stayed in college. A lot of them stayed in Europe. They weren't sure. Whereas when you only have six teams, you can find six great goalies, and they found more than that. But they didn't find enough or bring in enough yet in year one of the top offensive players. And so you had people who are probably better suited to be third line players playing on your top power play and things like that. So when you go out and you draft a goalie first, first in terms of what the other teams have done.
Yeah.
Yes. You're saying we want to reinforce that position. I think Ottawa is comfortable with Emeryn Smashmeyer at number one, and that's a national team stalwart and whatever. But I think when you look at Gwyneth Phillips, they're looking ahead and saying, you know, that this is someone who can push probably pretty soon to be our backup. But they're expecting the rest of the league to fill out a little bit. You saw Amanda Kessel go in the last round to Montreal, right? That's an offensive star. That's a multiple Olympic medalist. The league is going to keep getting better and better, and I think that's only going to help the offense. But I have a lot of time for the people who know better than me that say the goaltending, you can find six elite-level goalies to be number one for six teams in this league, and we didn't quite get there in year one with the forwards, and after this draft, we'll be much closer to
but
that
that's
again.
Okay, and I think maybe to wrap this conversation up is that's the beauty of following and building with a league from
it's
the
fun,
ground up.
Man. Yeah,
it's so much fun.
Yeah.
I love
They're figuring it out as they go, and we're learning as we go and watching it.
Like, listen, I always think I know a ton about.
I know that about you.
Like, yeah, I think I know a lot, but I don't know a lot about this.
Yeah.
But it's super interesting for me to go along for the ride and try and learn as much as I can from, like, Cheryl Pounder won't remember, but I went to school with Cheryl Pounder.
Really, eh?
Yeah. And she played on the Wilfrid Laurier University women's hockey team when I was going to school there. And, like, we know each other.
You probably sharpened her
little
skates for her.
I probably asked to, and she said no. But I knew her. I ran into her. Like, she was around. And I always thought that it was amazing to watch back in the day. And I agree. I think she is just a star.
Yes.
That is coming out. But anyway, I'm just saying, as a person, I've always encouraged, and I did this, and I hope people, if you're listening right now, I think the PWHL is just another. So what I did when I was young, because I wanted to learn as much as I could about all sports, and I'm not saying join a PWHL pool, but I joined as many pools with my friends. Like, we had Formula One pools before it was cool, and NASCAR and curling, and soccer, and all these different pools to draft players. Because you know what we did? We followed the league.
Forces
at
you
that
to learn,
point.
Man. There's another angle. I always say I used to know every player in the league, in the NHL, how they spelled their names, how they by playing video games. Every year they released a new game. It was like, oh, look, there's what's his name? And it was the same in baseball, same as, like, oh, that guy's now in Tampa. Oh, that guy's now over in Kansas City. Oh, what? And I kept up to it that way. There are ways of getting invested in it that help you learn something along the way. Gambling is one, like pools like that is one, video games is one. I'm not
100%. Yeah. But the problem is like, I think for a lot of people, maybe it's daunting to invest in something that a lot of people, like if you are a new NHL fan and you want to invest in the league, great. But then you have all these people that think they know every single thing about the league because it's been around forever and it's been part of our history and our culture.
Yeah.
Where we can all just learn and build and understand this together.
Right.
So that I can argue with you that they never should have drafted Serdachny as she's not going to be a top line player in 3 years.
Right.
But I don't know that yet.
No.
And I hope she is. And I'm not,
obviously,
I'm,
yeah. Like, it's just I'm an example.
Picking
yeah.
on her. Yeah, it's just an example. But I want to have those discussions.
Because we will do it at the NHL draft.
But what a chance for every sports fan to join on the ground floor and go, hey, just because somebody knows a little bit more about you than the league, maybe just listen to them and then learn on your own and try and understand it a little bit more and watch the games. And we always argue. This is the other thing I just want to wrap with. Yep. Like, I love the CFL. The Red Blacks are starting this week.
Yep.
You know, they play Thursday night, their first game against Winnipeg. I love the CFL. But there's no question that the CFL demographic is older and going the wrong direction.
Yep.
How do you get young people involved?
Yep.
Look at the PWHL and go, how do you get young people involved? Because this league has got young people involved.
Stoked, man.
Like
just
no
pumped.
Other league.
Yeah.
So why are people fighting against it? Just, even if you don't love it, fine, shut up and then let
just
people
get out of the way. Don't be a gatekeeper.
And,
don't be.
And guess what? The smartest people about this league, the Cheryl Pounders and the Haley Salvians and all those people who know everything about the league, that's great. And I respect their opinion, and all I'm going to do is read and listen to them. But I'm also going to do it on my own, too, because this league just started.
Yeah.
And I can do my own.
I get to form opinions. Yeah, like same way we do on our own teams and any other league.
Exactly. And I think that is a super cool thing for people to get involved in now, so that in another year or two or three, we're all in this together and we're all a little bit more knowledgeable about it. And I think that's awesome.
It's a lot of fun. This draft was great to watch. The big names that you've heard before, some young names that we aren't familiar with. It was really cool. And now, you know, we've got a long summer to wait and see, you know, like any other league at this point in their off season, we'll see some free agency. We'll see some things move around. That's going to be interesting as well. But they're promising closer to a 30-game season next year, kicking off around American Thanksgiving. So that's going to be really cool. You mentioned the Ottawa Red Blacks. They do start on Thursday night, first game against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, the last team in the league to start. That's a bit of a bummer. Everyone else was excited last week. I watched, but you know, it sucks when your team's not going. If you want to hear more about the Red Blacks and the CFL season, episode 1332, our man AJ Jakubek teeing up the Red Blacks was here. You can check that out at tallcanaudio.com or on whatever app you're hearing us right now. And we did a two-pack with AJ, episode 1331. You know, we brought him in. We thought we would talk about his travels. He's getting ready to watch the Canadian men's national team at Copa America. He's going to be touring around this summer to the Olympics.
Did you get off the Olympic story, or is he still talking about it?
I was intrigued by him, man. I'm into that stuff.
It's a crazy trip. But
we did that 1331, and we never even got to the CFL and the Red Blacks. So that's why we had to get him to stick around to do a second show. Yeah. So those are both available at tallcanaudio.com or, like I said, whatever app you're hearing us right now.
Well,
anything else you want to hit here, buddy?
Well, no, I'm looking forward to watching the Red Blacks because you asked me if I was going to watch last week, and I was like,
yeah,
I don't know. Like, the Red Blacks are playing. And then I did watch some, and I'm like, oh, my God. Toronto without Chad Kelly and Montreal looked really good.
Montreal did look good, yeah.
No, and Toronto looked good, too, without Chad Kelly.
No, you're right. Like, you're right. Better than
I'm
expected.
Like, oh, boy. Like, Ottawa better be
good. See, I didn't even throw that in your face. You said the East would still be winless by the time the Red Blacks started.
I know. Ottawa would be in first place, and now they're in third place. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. So they better be good early because – it was just watching those guys, those teams, Montreal and Toronto, going, they look ready. They look good. And like Toronto doesn't even have their star quarterback, and they look good, and Montreal looked really good, and
they did.
Like they played Winnipeg too, and so man, you better be starting well here if you're Ottawa. So
get
I'm
off
really
on the right
intrigued.
Foot.
Yeah, I'm just intrigued to what is going to happen on Thursday night, and then we'll see.
I appreciate it, man. Anything else you got that you wanted to mention here?
Or? No, I think that's good. I'm excited about the CFL Red Black season starting
it's
this
time,
week.
And, let's get going.
I'm excited.
No one has waited longer than Red Blacks fans, right?
Nope.
First team eliminated from the playoffs, last team to start the regular season.
I'll be excited next week to play the tape of you picking Edmonton when Florida wins in four straight. So I'll be looking forward to a lot of things next week, my friend.
I might be busy. I'll just stay here.
Yeah, I get it.
Like I said, you can check those out at tallcanaudio.com if you want to hear AJ's opinions on the CFL and the Red Blacks, and he would want you to hear them. On Monday, since I'll still be here, instead of Rob, our buddy Kevin Mickey from Sportsnet is going to sit in. Normally we turn to him when we want to talk wrestling and we don't want to hear Lever do it. That's where we have Kevin Mickey in, but he's a big
man. big mistake, man. Big mistake. You can.
Yeah, I know you're I think you're a Seinfeld guy, right?
Kevin Mistakey? Is that how you pronounce his name? No.
Okay. George always got jealous of one of Jerry's friends on Seinfeld. Like, oh, the summer me, right? And so that's it's Lee and Kevin.
I'm gonna wait for the episode of like all the clones.
Yeah. So. Kevin Mickey's going to sit in, like I said, from Sportsnet. We'll talk about games 3 and 4 at that point in the Stanley Cup final, whatever's going on with the Blue Jays and you know, the usual Monday news. So we look forward to having Kevin Mickey on for that. That's where we're going to wrap this one up for Lever Sage. My name is Matt Robinson. Thank you so much for listening. Give us a follow on social media. Make sure you're subscribed to the pod wherever you're hearing us, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for showing up. It was fucking amazing. Sorry.